we were going in a different direction at the wide receiver position. We came back from the owners' meetings. We had no takers from a trade standpoint, so felt it was best at that point in time to release him and let him negotiate with 31 other teams. It had nothing to do with anything that was written in the newspaper, anything to do with any off-field behaviors. I wish him the best of luck, and I know he's down in Washington now. We'll face him twice a year, and I've got nothing but good things to say about the show.
A little too little, a little too late, a little too incomplete from Chip Kelly, who did a great job in his first year as the head coach of the Eagles. But Chip Kelly addressing for the first time yesterday the decision to cut DeSean Jackson. And there are some holes in that explanation. One thing that really stands out to me, now that I've had a chance to think about it, the idea that there were no takers for DeSean Jackson, that they got no offers. Well, of course they weren't going to get offers on a contract that paid DeSean Jackson $10.5 million. For 2014. So the obvious follow-up, if you ever do get a chance to ask a follow-up question, because he just keeps rattling off information, and by the time he takes a breath, you have 15 different potential follow-up topics. I'd want to know, was at any point DeSean Jackson given permission to talk to other teams directly about a new contract, about a reduced contract, because no one was going to pay him $10.5 million. He didn't get $10.5 million on the open market, but he got $8 million per year from Washington. So, could they have negotiated that same deal while DeSean Jackson was under contract with the Eagles and gotten something from the Redskins for DeSean Jackson? They traded Donovan McNabb to the Redskins 4 years ago this month. Why not do something to get anything of value for DeSean Jackson? So, not getting any offers isn't enough for me. What did you do to try to get other offers? What did you do to let your player try to negotiate a contract with another team so you could maybe get an offer? And the idea that it was purely football, if that's the case, then why didn't they say that back when the brush fire was burning about all the off-field issues, the report from NJ.com? And look, all due respect, that thing was made to be a lot more than it really was. When you look at it, it just had the fingerprints of a lawyer who specializes in defamation cases, making sure they didn't say anything that in isolation would be actionable. It raised the stink of gang affiliations. Why not say then that, that's all baloney. Don't pay attention to any of that. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. This was a purely football decision. Why not say that a month ago? So there's just something about all of this that doesn't sit well with me. And not included in the clip that we just showed, the idea that the Eagles aren't concerned about facing DeSean Jackson. I don't know that I like that answer either from a PR standpoint. I think the better answer would have been, we're concerned about everybody who's on the Redskins and the Cowboys and the Giants. We're concerned because there are good teams in the NFL. Yeah, we're concerned about facing DeSean Jackson and RG3 and Pierre Garçon and Alfred Morris and Brian Arakpo, et cetera, et cetera. They also should be concerned about facing the Seattle Seahawks, because they will face the Seattle Seahawks this year because both teams won their respective divisions. And Earl Thomas is under contract, $10 million a year on a four-year extension. Now you throw in the fifth year, the year he's already under contract, the final year of his rookie contract, it pulls the average under $10 million. But still, for the four-year extension, $10 million a year, that's more than any other defensive back currently is making in the NFL, safety or corner, on a multi-year deal. Great deal for Earl Thomas. Now, he was being paid very well under the pick, the slot for the 14th overall pick the year he was drafted. So it wasn't as pressing for the Seahawks to pay him because he's been rewarded. It is far more pressing, especially now after the Earl Thomas deal was done, to get Richard Sherman under contract. And I think they played this the right way. Do Earl Thomas first, then do Richard Sherman. Because if you do Sherman first and you really set the bar high, how do you keep Earl Thomas under that? It's better to get the best deal you can with Thomas and then understand that you're going to pay Richard Sherman more. I'm told that discussions on Richard Sherman's contract will continue this afternoon. I'm told the target continues to be the draft. We'll see if they can get it done by next week. It appears they can. I've got some updated information. The thinking is maybe the Seahawks will feel compelled to get this thing done now that Earl Thomas is done, because the underlying message is you've got to show respect to the guys who have helped the team get to where it is. Richard Sherman is the first guy up for a new contract during this period of time. that the Seahawks are trying to take care of their own, and they need to take care of their own because the Seahawks helped generate not just a Super Bowl win, but a Super Bowl blowout, an old-school 70s-style Super Bowl beatdown, 35-point win, 43-8 final score. And now we find that the Denver Broncos are using that margin of defeat as motivation. Here's one of the Broncos players talking about it yesterday.
Oh, we use it every day. You know, these workouts, we come in, we know, we say, you know, we lost by 35, so that's our motivation. And whenever somebody gets tired, you just say 35, and, you know, they start picking it up again. So, you know we got to come back strong this year. We had a disappointing loss, but, you know, that's last season. We're ready to move on.
That's brilliant. Anytime anybody gets tired, you just, all you got to say is 35. You don't even have to yell. You just have to mouth. That's all you have to do. And they all know. I think it's great to find a way, even if it's a very thin silver lining in that ugly dark cloud that hangs over the Denver Broncos after a great season last year that ended with that 35-point blowout. It's great to take that and spin it into a positive. They're going to face the Seahawks this year in the regular season. If they get back to the Super Bowl, they're either going to play the Seahawks or somebody who has beaten the Seahawks, which means it ain't going to be easy for the Denver Broncos. So get that extra motivation, work a little bit harder, think about it every day. It's almost like Rocky Balboa when he was doing the reps with the overhead bar, yelling Creed's name in between or during the reps as he's pushing it out. He knows what his focus was, and the Broncos know what their focus is. So I think it's a great way to try to narrow that gap. It's one thing to go out and sign a bunch of new guys as they've done on the defensive side of the ball and one or two on offense. It's another thing to be thinking every day about what is awaiting the Denver Broncos as the 2014 season approaches. Here's what's awaiting here today on PFT Live. When we return from break, Jason Verrett of the Texas Christian Horned Frogs, now entering the National Football League. We'll talk to him about what's coming up 9 days away from the draft. Does he wish it had already happened? We'll talk to Jason Verrett about that coming up. And then, mock draft, part two, picks 5 through 8. We are working our way down. We did 1 through 4 yesterday, 5 through 8 today. You can do the math. If we stay on track, we'll get it all done just in time for the real draft. It can't get here soon enough. Segment two with Jason Verrett. We'll get here even sooner. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live.
I believe that I'm the best corner in this draft. I'm confident in what my capabilities are on the field.
You know, even though I'm only 5'9", I just feel like I'm a lot better than a lot of other corners that's in this draft. So I feel very confident I should be a first round.
Some pictures and some sound from one of the top cornerbacks in this year's draft, TCU's Jason Verrett. As we get closer and closer and closer, hopefully, and finally we'll get there to the draft, we continue to talk to some of the guys who will be drafted. Jason joins us now. Jason, I asked you during the break how you're doing, and you said cool. And how can you be cool during these 2 weeks? Because the draft already should have happened. You're now in limbo waiting for the draft to finally get here.
Yeah, man. I'm just patiently waiting, man. So it hasn't really hit me yet. I'm pretty sure it is when I get on that plane headed to New York. But right now I'm just rehabbing and relaxing.
What do you got planned for the next 8 days beyond rehabbing that shoulder you had surgery on back in March?
Oh, no, that's just mainly my main focus, just rehabbing, and then me and my family head out to New York on the 5th.
So you're going to be there a few days early for the draft.
Yeah.
It starts on the evening of the 8th. You meeting with any teams between now and the time you head to New York?
Yeah, I just actually finished all my visits. I met with St. Louis, Houston, the Jets, Arizona, and Pittsburgh.
Now, visits or workouts? Because there's a difference. Visit, you go see them. You can't work out. Who'd you do any workouts with? And again, I know you're rehabbing that shoulder, so there's only so much you could do.
But, yeah, I only had one private workout. And that was after my pro day on March 6th. I worked out with the Carolina Panthers. But I had my surgery on the 17th of March, so all the visits had just been, you know, tours and interviews and board work with all those teams.
Which team do you think right now is the most interested?
I really don't know. Being at this draft, I mean, I could probably get drafted by a team I never visited. So I'm just assuming that all the visits that I went on, since those were their 30 player visits, I felt like all those teams were interested.
You know, when I think about the various prospects, I try to figure out the highest they can go and the lowest they can go. Do you have for yourself a floor and a ceiling as to where you may go?
I think anywhere between, you know, pick 20 and 32, somewhere in between those in the first round.
At what point do you start feeling, you know, the collars maybe a little tighter and the sweats maybe a little more profuse and, you know, I'm on the board longer than I thought I was going to be on the board?
I'm not sure. I mean, come draft day, if I'm around pick 26, 27, if I haven't been taken, then I'll probably be a little worried. But, you know, if it's anywhere in the first round, man, I'm going to be happy.
What was your thought process to accept the invitation? Because not everyone accepts the invitation to go to the draft. It's got some good things. It's got some bad things. What for you caused you to decide to accept that invitation?
I just think it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You know, whether if it's first round or early second round, I mean, it's just a blessing to have my family there to support me, you know, from this long journey that I've been going through. So I had to accept it.
Who gets the first hug once you get off the phone with whoever's drafting you?
Oh, my mom, of course.
And when you see the commissioner, you walk out on the stage, he's known for those bear hugs. Are you ready to get lifted off the ground by the commissioner?
Yeah, definitely. I actually went and saw draft day a couple of days ago, man. And when one of those players went up on the draft, it kind of, went up on the stage, man, it kind of got me chills. So I know that hug is going to be probably a memorable hug for me.
Well, one good thing about the draft approaching is you don't have to meet with any more teams. You don't have to answer any more questions. Give me the one question that you got asked the most that you were just sick of being asked by teams.
Probably, you know, just my height. You know, just seeing how I felt about it. You know, how I felt about going against somebody, you know, 6'2", 6'3", or, you know, having to cover in the slot. But I just felt like my versatility is what is able to answer that question. You know, I feel like I could play outside and I could play inside. I could blitz. You know, I feel like I could do a lot of good things. So that probably was the most question, I mean, common question that I got, but I get the same answer to all of them.
Well, and since you were asked that question so many times and you're sick of being asked that question, let me ask you again. You come out of the huddle and here comes Calvin Johnson. And you got to go up and try to press him off the line of scrimmage and try to cover him down the field. What do you plan to do?
My plan, of course, is that any receiver, you know, I'm a compete. You know, I'm pretty sure Calvin's going to make his plays, and I'm going to make my plays, but I just hope that I make the play that counts at the end of the game.
Who's the guy you faced in college, the receiver that gave you the hardest time?
I probably had to say Odell Beckham. I mean, he was a guy that was constantly, you know, competing. And we went back and forth, but I think that was probably one of the best receivers I've seen.
Give me one aspect of your game that you're trying to work on that you think you need to improve on to succeed at the NFL level.
Just my press, you know, get better at the two-hand jam, just because we wasn't taught to two-hand jam in college. And so that's probably one of the common things I want to work on, but of course, you know, my feet work and fluid hips, I constantly continue to work on that, but definitely want to get better at my press.
Give me one thing you do that you think you do better than any of the other corners who are available this year in the draft.
I probably had to say tackle. I feel like I'm probably one of the better tacklers in this draft, and you know, being this size, since I'm gonna have to play in the slot, I'm gonna have to be able to show run support, so that's why I feel like I fit in perfect.
Now, it could be that tackling ability contributed to the shoulder problem. Have you gotten a lot of questions from teams and concerns from teams about durability at the next level in light of the shoulder surgery?
Not at all, because I was able to play through it. So I feel like, you know, with this surgery, it's only going to make it better. So I'm going to continue to rehab, continue to get stronger. You know, once I'm 100%, I mean, I feel like it's a wrap now.
Jason, when do you think you'll be 100% and ready to go?
My goal is to be 100% around August, so I guess around camp.
How big of a deal do you think it is for teams? Do you think it's going to cause you to go later, or do they seem to be okay with the idea that you've had the surgery, you're rehabbing, and you'll be fine?
Yeah, most of them all feel like they're glad that I had the surgery because, if I didn't, who knows where I would be pulling out or, whatever the case may be. So I feel like by having the surgery now, being ready for camp, it's only going to be better for me.
What aren't you able to do physically right now that you need to be able to do to practice or play?
I just can't, have any contact right now. I just start, just basic light lifting, not like no benching or nothing like that, but just a little light machine work and doing my resistance bands. And, of course, riding the bike just to keep my cardio up. But I'm just constantly getting better, man, day by day.
Well, soon you're going to be slipping a nice dress shirt and jacket over that shoulder. You got everything picked out for next Thursday night?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be real smooth on stage, so I'm excited.
All right. Well, I'll be the judge of that. I'll be there. I'll give you a grade. I'll give you a grade. I look forward to seeing you there. Appreciate you taking some time. And all the best as the draft approaches, Jason.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
All right. There he is, Jason Verrett, TCU cornerback. The trend is toward the bigger corners, but if you can have the same impact, if you can get up there on the line of scrimmage and redirect and knock guys off the route and then have the ability to recover and stay up with them and do all the stuff, doesn't matter how big you are. We talk about it with quarterbacks all the time. Why should it matter with corners? We'll see what happens with Jason. And you know what? It's not like there's a 6'2", 6'3", corner this year at the top of the class. They're all south of 6 feet, like me. So I like these guys. When you come back, you'll see who I like for picks 5 through 8 in the PFT Live mock draft. Like I said yesterday, we're having some fun. This isn't any type of prediction. I'm not doing anything goofy like putting a kicker in the top 10, as far as you know. You'll find out if you stick around. Here we go. 4 picks in the books. Picks 5 through 8 coming up right now in the 5th team on the clock, the Oakland Raiders. There was a report last week from Jerry McDonald that the Raiders like Michigan tackle Taylor Lewan better than the other elite tackles. Now, Greg Robinson already off the board if you were paying attention yesterday. Jake Matthews still on the board. Taylor Lewan off the board at number 5. There's a chance the Raiders trade back because Sammy Watkins is still in play. So someone could, in theory, try to do what the Dolphins did last year and jump up. This year, I got a feeling the Raiders are going to play it safe. They're going to get the guy they think they can plug in week one, help protect Matt Schaub, and God knows he needs it, help open running lanes for Maurice Jones-Drew and Darren McFadden. This is all about doing what you have to do to win now. And if they like Lewan, Lewan's their guy, and off they go, and they hope for the best in 2014. As they face one of the toughest schedules with 3 of those first 4 games at 10 a.m. local time and a game in London. We talked about that all last week. No point talking about it again. What we're going to talk about now is at number 6. Now, when the Jaguars trade down, and again, I'm going to say this 50 times over the next week and a half. I'm not predicting there's going to be a trade. I'm just floating that possibility as we have fun here. But if the Jaguars do trade down from number 3 to number 6 with the Falcons, who traded up to get Khalil Mack under this mock draft, the Jaguars are thinking maybe Johnny Manziel's still going to be there. Johnny Manziel's not going to be there, which you know if you tuned in yesterday. So Sammy Watkins is. And at this point, it's a coup for the Jaguars to get Sammy Watkins at number 6. All the issues with Justin Blackmon, Sammy Watkins comes in. I still am not sold on him or any receiver coming in and making an immediate impact. But they're saying Watkins could be the best prospect since A.J. Green and Julio Jones 3 years ago. They were both pretty good from the get-go. Sammy Watkins gets going to Jacksonville. And then at number 7, hey, let's continue the run on receivers. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers clearly need a wideout after trading Mike Williams to the Buffalo Bills. They've got Vincent Jackson. He's 31, as Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times pointed out yesterday. So how about Mike Evans? The guy who compares in many ways to Calvin Johnson, both from a size and hands standpoint. The only difference is speed. Mentioned this last night on NBCSN. Mike Evans ran a 4.53 at the combine. 7 years ago, Calvin Johnson ran a 4.35 at the combine in shoes he borrowed from someone else. Other than that, maybe Mike Evans is the reason Johnny Manziel, there he is with his Mean Machine getup. Maybe Mike Evans had something to do with all the success of Johnny Football. And look, we're throwing in all sorts of crazy trades and possibilities here, so I can't wrap up part two without throwing another curveball, because I think the Lions are taking a serious look at Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle from Pitt at number 10, because of the uncertainty with Nick Fairley, whose option won't be picked up, the uncertainty with Ndamukong Suh, who knows when he's going to show up, who knows if they can sign him to a new contract. And Aaron Donald's just, he's been the star of the offseason in the interior defensive line between the Senior Bowl and the Combine and everything else. Disruptive, fast, quick, everything that you want in a defensive tackle. So the Giants trade up to get in front of the Lions to get Aaron Donald away from the Lions, and the Vikings slide down to number 12. Again, we're just having some fun here. I have no inside information that would suggest that's going to happen, but it just makes sense because the Giants could use him, the Lions could use him, the Giants get in front of the Lions to make it happen, and the Vikings help keep Aaron Donald out of the division, and the Vikings move down to number 12. Which means that come tomorrow, when we do picks 9 through 12, you'll know what the Vikings do with the 12th pick. Will they trade back up? Will they trade down? Will they use the pick? I know you can't wait to find out. Well, you know what? I haven't gone that far yet. As I said yesterday, I'm doing these four a day. So at some point tomorrow morning, I'll decide what the Vikings are going to do. And then at noon Eastern time, I'll share it with you. We hope you'll return tomorrow for another edition of PFT Live. Check us out tonight on NBCSN. London Fletcher, the great London Fletcher, in studio for the entire hour. Yes, we're back to a full hour today, 5:30 Eastern time. It's 24 hours a day at ProFootballTalk.com, around the clock. We're always open. The draft, finally, we're in that week before the week of the draft, so it's starting to crank up. I know it should have happened last week, but it's coming. It's 9 days away. We'll have you covered, every angle, every player, everything going on. Check us out at ProFootballTalk.com. See you back here tomorrow. Have a great day.